Chapter 84. Or in that name upon which I shall call tomorrow to witness what I do, so falsely, and so shamefully, I swear I will refuse the hand of this man in the church. If I do not, may I fall dead upon the pavement. ... The mother answered with a look of quick alarm, in no degree diminished by the look she met. It is enough, ... said Edith, steadily, that we are what we are. I will have no youth and truth dragged down to my level. I will have no guileless nature undermined, corrupted, and perverted, to amuse the leisure of a world of mothers. You know my meaning. Florence must go home. ... You are an idiot, Edith, ... cried her angry mother. Do you expect there can ever be peace for you in that house, till she is married, and away? ... Ask me, or ask yourself, if I ever expect peace in that house, ... said her daughter, and you know the answer. And am I to be told tonight, after all my pains and labor, and when you are going, through me, to be rendered independent, ... her mother almost shrieked in her passion, while her palsied head shook like a leaf, that there is corruption and contagion in me, and that I am not fit company for a girl. What are you, pray? What are you? ... I have put the question to myself, ... said Edith, ashy pale, and pointing to the window, more than once when I have been sitting there, and something in the faded likeness of my sex has wandered past outside, and God knows I have met with my reply. Oh mother, mother, if you had but left me to my natural heart, when I too was a girl, a younger girl than Florence, how different I might have been. ... Sensible that any show of anger was useless here, her mother restrained herself, and fell a whimpering, and bewailed that she had lived too long, and that her only child had cast her off, and that duty towards parents was forgotten in these evil days, and that she had heard unnatural taunts, and cared for life no longer. If one is to go on living through continual scenes like this, ... she whined, I am sure it would be much better for me to think of some means of putting an end to my existence. Oh! The idea of your being my daughter, Edith, and addressing me in such a strain. ... Between us, mother, ... returned Edith, mournfully, the time for mutual reproaches is past. Then why do you revive it? ... whimpered her mother. You know that you are lacerating me in the cruelest manner. You know how sensitive I am to unkindness. At such a moment too, when I have so much to think of, and am naturally anxious to appear to the best advantage. I wonder at you, Edith, to make your mother afraid upon your wedding day. ... Edith bent the same fixed look upon her, as she sobbed and rubbed her eyes, and said in the same low steady voice, which had neither risen nor fallen, since she first addressed her, I have said that Florence must go home. ... Let her go. ... cried the afflicted and affrighted parent, hastily. I am sure I am willing she should go. What is the girl to me? ... She is so much to me, that rather than communicate, or suffer to be communicated to her, one grain of the evil that is in my breast, mother, I would renounce you, as I would, if you gave me cause, renounce him in the church tomorrow, ... replied Edith. Leave her alone. She shall not, while I can interpose, be tampered with and tainted by the lessons I have learned. This is no hard condition on this bitter night. ... If you had proposed it in a filial manner, Edith, ... whined her mother, perhaps not, very likely not. But such extremely cutting words, ... they are past, and at an end between us now, ... said Edith. Take your own way, mother, share as you please in what you have gained, spend, enjoy, make much of it, and be as happy as you will. The object of our lives is one. Henceforth let us wear it silently. My lips are closed upon the past from this hour. I forgive you your part in tomorrow's wickedness. May God forgive my own. ... Without a tremor in her voice, her frame, and passing onward with a foot that set itself upon the neck of every soft emotion, she bade her mother good night, and repaired to her own room. But not to rest, for there was no rest in the tumult of her agitation, when alone to and fro, and to and fro, and to and fro again, 500 times, among the splendid preparations for her adornment on the morrow, with her dark hair shaken down, her dark eyes flashing with a raging light, her broad white bosom red with the cruel grasp of the relentless hand with which she spurned it from her, pacing up and down with an averted head, as if she would avoid the sight of her own fair person, and divorce herself from its companionship. Thus, in the dead time of the night before her bridal, Edith Granger wrestled with her unquiet spirit, tearless, friendless, silent, proud, and uncomplaining. At length it happened that she touched the open door which led into the room where Florence lay. She started, stopped, and looked in. A light was burning there, and showed her Florence in her bloom of innocence and beauty, fast asleep. Edith held her breath, and felt herself drawn on towards her. Drawn nearer, nearer, nearer yet, at last, drawn so near, that stooping down, she pressed her lips to the gentle hand that lay outside the bed, and put it softly to her neck. Its touch was like the prophet's rod of old upon the rock. Her tears sprung forth beneath it, as she sunk upon her knees, and laid her aching head and streaming hair upon the pillow by its side. Thus Edith Granger passed the night before her bridal. Thus the sun found her on her bridal morning. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.